Running solo with a great guest coming up next as Chris Atterbury from the Twins Radio Network joins us here on the program this afternoon. Chris, long time no talk. How are things?
Yeah, things are good. Obviously, coming off a nice year, it makes for a shorter offseason, which is good. Kind of a goofy spring where you're adding viable major league players throughout the course of your Grapefruit League schedule. And now we're ready to go. An exhibition tonight, and we can take the wraps off this thing and get out there and see if a team that looks as if it's gotten better can actually go out and prove that they're better on the field.
It's certainly been an interesting offseason across baseball with the wait and the wait and then the wait again before we finally saw free agents start to go off the board. Yu Darvish, somebody that the Twins were heavily involved with, he was one of the first names to go out, and then things trickled down from there. But the Twins, though they didn't get Darvish, they did a lot to help out that starting rotation. Take a shot here on Odorizzi and Lance Lynn, your expectations for them and just the guys that are coming in to help out that rotation.
Well, I think that there's no way you can look at what the Twins have done pitching-wise and not say that they're better than they were a year ago. Now, that's with Irvin Santana out, obviously, and you're going to get him back in a month, and that'll make things even better. You've got the young kid in Barrios. You want to grow your own, and he has chances to step forward and really become, you know, the guy that can be pretty special. A lot of folks around the league are keeping a very close watch on Jose. Kyle Gibson is trying to be the guy he was the second half of last season. He had a good spring. So he's kind of, you know, still a bit of an enigma in the middle. And then you go out and get the bona fide major league starter. Odorizzi was phenomenal once he got healthy last year down the stretch. He had a no-hitter against us into the seventh. Here's a guy who's just polished and poised, big league guy. Is he Yu Darvish? No. He's not Clayton Kershaw, but he is a viable, productive major league starter. Lance Lynn, same way. All he's ever done is pitch effectively for good teams and win a ton of games. And when you can wait and wait and you get Odorizzi for a minor league shortstop that's down your own personal minor league shortstop depth chart, and you get Lance Lynn for, what, $5.5 million less than a qualifying offer, I mean, we're talking some serious bargain shopping that produced name brand product. So you can't help but feel better about it. The other thing that makes this rotation better, two things. One is the schedule. You don't need a fifth guy until much, much later in the season. And that'll be Phil Hughes, who thankfully you don't need him because he just went on the DL. So you can have an extra bullpen guy. And the other thing is that bullpen, because you've now got Addison Reed, Jack Duke, and Fernando Rodney at the back end of your bullpen. So the guys who were doing the heavy lifting last year at the end, Rogers, Hillenberger, they can come into ballgames now much earlier in a game as opposed to being in the pressure cooker eighth, ninth inning. Dolly Buznitz was critical down the stretch. Pitched well in the spring, didn't even make the bullpen. So I think the depth of the bullpen and then just veterans who've been there in the rotation, especially a guy like Lynn working on a one-year deal, lots to prove. I think it's nothing but upside for the rotation.
So it was a great spring as it pertains to bringing guys in, getting everything kind of right, but there were some negatives that happened, including the suspension to Polanco after a breakout second half a year ago. He'll be on the shelf for 80 games before he's allowed to come back and also won't be able to be a part of the playoff roster. Hopefully we're talking about that by the time we get to late September, early October. But Chris, it feels like, at least to me, that if there is a team pretty well equipped to withstand losing a guy like that for half the season, it is the Twins. With Adrianza behind him, Escobar, you lose some flexibility that maybe you had before, but at the very least you have some ready-made guys that can step in there for these 80 games.
Well, I agree that you're right. I mean, it's a hit. I mean, he's a quality player, hits from both sides of the plate, and he's defensively probably a better player than Escobar at short, but you do have some depth there. Escobar's been called on in spots like this before. Even last year when Sano went down in the back half of the season, suddenly Esco was an everyday third baseman for a team that was surging into the playoffs and had a great year. He was in the shortstop spot a couple of years before that. Every time he's found a permanent home in the lineup, and it's happened repeatedly since he came over in that Morneau deal, or the Liriano deal with the White Sox, every time he's had a permanent home, he's performed even better at the plate. So I'm not too worried about Escobar. I think Adrianza was a really underappreciated piece last year to what went on, and his versatility certainly plays. And you do have some depth now in the minor leagues, but, you know, ideally those two guys can carry the water, and then Jorge can get back and get straight, and the Twins are even better, you know, after 80 games.
continuing with our baseball previews here across the Midwest today, the Minnesota Twins. Chris Atterbury from the Twins Radio Network joining us here. Chris, much of that flexibility also with the loss of Polanco. Miguel Sano, where it felt like maybe you're going to be able to play him, DH him a little bit more, even first base at times. Seems like that flexibility is gone, and with it is Miguel Sano with the new rod in the leg and a little bit more weight, it looked like, in spring training on him. Can he play third base each and every day?
That's a great question. I wish I had the answer. He's a big dude. No matter what he's doing exercise-wise, he's always going to be a pretty big dude. But the flexibility really doesn't come or get dipped into because of the Polanco. That's the Morrison signing, right? You're going to have Logan Morrison now eating up a lot of those DH at-bats and first base when Joe's off. And there will be days when Joe and Logan are out and Miguel can slide over there and put a right-handed stick there and you can play Adrianza and Escobar together on the left side of the infield. But it's a valid question that you ask. Can he withstand a full season? Because for all the talent Miguel has, and he's got a ton of it, and for the productivity we've seen, and we've seen stretches where he has been all-star level productive, and he may be all-star game, but one thing he's never done is play a full season. So until he does it, I guess we can't answer that.
Chris, a lot of expectations certainly for me. I'm a Twins fan. This is as optimistic. I'm normally on the other side of the fence. I'm more of a glass half empty kind of guy, but I'm optimistic. What's your biggest concern right now? When you look at this team, what they built, what they're put together, what's the one thing that still concerns you going into 2018?
Well, I think health. I think health is always a concern because one injury or two injuries, and they happen, right? They can change everything. I think for me, if you want to talk like X's and O's concerns, last year the backbone of this team was they're fundamentally how sound they were defensively. Now, they had some brilliant defensive players, Joe and Brian and Byron, obviously, the best in the game. But fundamentally, they were really good. They threw to the right base. They made the right plays. They didn't give anybody any extra outs. And that's hard to sustain because you've got a bunch of players who, by and large, you take Dozier, Castro, Mauer out of there, they're young guys. And so they're still going to have some peaks and valleys. And you hope that they don't get into the mode of, well, we did it last year and we don't have to focus on that again. That's something that I discussed a little bit with Paul Molitor even this week, is maintaining the focus on those little things to continue to get better. So that concerns me. There is volatility with young players. Max, Byron, Eddie, Miguel, those are still young players, and those guys will have ups and downs. We haven't even begun to see the ceiling on these guys, which is the fun part, but they will have some ups and downs. So the volatility, how do you deal with expectation? I think that's something that's always a big deal. And then X and O's wise, Morrison brings a big bat, but he's had the one really good year, but he hasn't consistently been the 38 home run guy. He's consistently been the 18 to 20 home run guy who strikes out a ton. So you have a potential to kill some rallies in there with pop-ups and strikeouts between him and Miguel. You could be looking at 400 strikeouts. So how do you structure things so that the rest of the lineup, which is built with guys who can hit over the fence, sure, but they go gap to gap and they run and they're aggressive and they feel lazy, and then you've got thumpers, you don't want them to be deflating thumpers in the middle of the lineup. So that's a fun problem to have because you're trying to figure out how to order some legit major league bats, which is not always been the case. So just consistency moves. There's still problems in health are the biggest issues to me, and not getting caught up in your individual numbers and staying collectively in pursuit of the same goal. The strengths last year, again, were the fundamentals, and this was a real tight group. It was a team that played for each other and not for themselves. That's always hard to maintain, right? I mean, that's, mm-hmm. We can talk about it. You can logically know about it, but human nature tells us that that's not always how things work. You got a lot of guys on one-year deals. Can they still be all in for the good of the collective as opposed to the individual? That's the biggest thing.
Chris Atterbury from the Twins Radio Network. Chris, great hearing your voice, and hopefully around these parts, a little forbearance to maybe things to come. We'll be hearing your voice a lot more in Central Iowa this season.
I would like that very, very much. And speaking of Iowa, if any of you guys want to roll up to Cedar Rapids, there are going to be some future stars wearing Colonel's uniforms up there, and it'll be worth your drive.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thank you.
Chris Atterbury with the Twins Radio Network. Keep your ears peeled and your eyes peeled. Maybe some more news coming on that in the coming days, and a possibility we get to hear Chris a whole lot more. I'm hopeful for that, certainly, as a Minnesota Twins fan. Should be a fun year. Expectations, I'm not used to this. I'm not used to going into the season confident with my team, confident with what they did in the offseason. I'm excited for it. A lot of times when that happens, it goes the other way. And that also might be, I become a little bit jilted, jaded, whatever term you want to throw on it, because of that. You don't know. You really don't know. And there's two sides. There's fans that come at it different angles. I'm the pessimistic side. This team, though, I think has a chance to be really good. I like what they did. You need some guys to develop. You need guys to take a next step. You need Berríos to become not just solid, but become a star. You need Buxton to bust out and be the guy. Sano coming back. I mean, there are still plenty of question marks, no doubt. But excited about this season. Should be a great one for the Twins. They start on Thursday, their opener against Baltimore. That'll be a 1:05 first pitch on the opening day for baseball. They're in Baltimore for three, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. Then on the road for two against Pittsburgh, the Pirates, on Monday at noon. And then 5 o'clock on Wednesday before they come home on April 5th, their home opener. It's against the Seattle Mariners, 3:10 with the first pitch there for the Minnesota Twins. Seattle for three, then Houston, then the White Sox after that before they depart and make their way down to Puerto Rico for a two-game set against Cleveland. Interesting opening month and an opening couple of weeks to the season, certainly, for the Minnesota Twins. We take a look at the Twins, Cubs, Cardinals, Royals, Brewers, White Sox, maybe a little bit. We'll do a small hit. Don't forget, tomorrow on the programs, both starting at noon with Ken Miller and myself, we'll be giving our baseball predictions. And then tomorrow here on Jimmy B and TC, we'll be doing the same predictions on the season coming tomorrow on the programs. We're due for a break when we come back on the other side. We're going to be talking some Iowa Hawkeyes. John Bonacamp from the Burlington Hawkeye newspaper, he's going to join us. We'll get into a little Hawkeye hoops, some Hawkeye football from today. Seth Wallace was at the podium talking to the assembled media, him along with Reese Morgan. So we'll get some thoughts from that on John. Pro Day yesterday also happening. We'll get into that. John Bonacamp joins us. Coming up on the other side, a quick timeout. This portion of the program brought to you by Advantage Financial and Tax Services. If you haven't done it, you're running short on time. You got to get on it right now. Set up your appointment with Mike Hammond. Big sports fan, but more importantly, he's going to help you with your taxes, financial planning, and a whole lot more. Tax day, just a couple weeks away. Make that phone call today. Go to Advantage Iowa for more details. It's Advantage Financial and Tax Services.
And welcome back, as we're joined right now
by John Bonacamp from the Burlington Hawkeye on the Hawkeye beat, and a myriad of other things, an AP Top 25 voter. Actually, John, before we get into the Hawkeyes, I want to start right there with you. Obviously, no Top 25 coming out during the NCAA tournament, but there is the final release, correct, that comes out right after
the season? They're done.
Oh.
No, they're done. The only poll that comes out at the end is the coaches' poll.
Coach, okay.
Yeah, the USA or whatever it is now.
Right.
That's the last one.
Interesting.
But,
so
yeah, there's no AP poll after the end of the regular season.
If you did have a final poll, would you put the final four, 1 through 4, as your final four?
You know, it's funny. That's one of the ways. That's how I do it, because I vote in the FCS poll during football season, and they have one at the end of the playoff. And the way they do it is, you are supposed to vote the champion number one. So the way I do it is, I always vote 1 and 2 as the final two teams, and then I go down through the playoffs and rank them as they finish in terms of like where they were in the rankings before. So it's like if the number 3 team loses their first round, they're the top one. You know, it's kind of hard to explain, but I use the playoffs as a way to do the final rankings, because I think it is a way to determine it. Would I put these four in there? I mean, Michigan was in my top 10. You know, Villanova was in Kansas. Those two teams were there, so they would probably be 1, 2, 3. Would I put Loyola 4? Why not? Look at who they've beaten, and you know, I mean, it would be a top 10 team for sure. you know, whether they'd be number four, I don't know. But, I mean, you have to take some things into consideration of who they'd beat and that sort of thing, and the fact that they are one of the last four standing.
You know, it
you got to put the CBI winner in there, too.
Oh, really? That's another one of your prerequisites, huh?
Yeah.
So
I love the best of three series.
Yes, I do, too. And I watched early on, though it turned into a blowout. I was watching the CBI last night with North Texas, who started the CBI with not a very good record.
Yeah.
You know,
those tournaments are nice for some of those teams because you can build. I mean, Loyola built off their CBI appearance a few years ago. You know, so, I mean, you can build something, especially if you're a mid-major program, off of those kind of tournaments.
The CIT, the same?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you have a team that has not played in a tournament for a while, and you play in a situation like that, and you have a young team, I think it can be beneficial for you. And I mean, yes, some of those tournaments you have to put up a little bit of money, but it's still, I think, worth the investment in the long run to give those guys something to play for and something to have fun with and something to look for to gain experience off of, I think.
Well, and a team we'll see tonight in the NIT, maybe this will be a catapult for Pat Chambers and for Penn State. You know, close this year.
Sure.
It seems like they always are good in the NIT, though. Every time they get there, they make a run.
Oh, yeah.
I think they won it in, like, 2009, something like that. They beat the Hawks one year. That was in the quarterfinals, I believe.
Yes, it was. That was the game. Yeah, it was, because we were trying to figure out if I was going to go to New York or not if they won. And I remember that now. Who was the guy that hit the winning shot? I want to say it was Pete Lisicki.
Pete Lisicki, yes.
Shot. Yep.
Yes.
Yep, and Carver Hawkeye. And that would have been, what, mid-90s? Yeah.
Yep.
So, again, those kind of tournaments, if you have a young team and you haven't played in the postseason and you get a chance to do it and you make a run, I think it's beneficial for the program and for the players in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely, and using that kind of to go forward. Well, let's stay with the basketball theme here and jump over to the Hawkeyes. Last week, it was announced that Ahmad Wagner moving on. He's going to be playing football somewhere. A lot of people believe in Iowa City is going to be his destination. And, of course, Brady Ellingson, no surprise, he's moving on. He'll play his fifth season somewhere else. Are you hearing, is there still more to come, or do you feel like it's over? Like, basically, waiting for Tyler Cook, his final decision of what he's going to do, either coming back or keeping his name in, and go from there, or is there still more to come?
I think maybe they're done, but, I mean, you hear names and you hear things, and I think that if somebody's going to leave, they have to have a place to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, if somebody is looking to leave, he may or may not have found a place yet. So, does another name or two come up? It wouldn't surprise me. It also wouldn't surprise me if it all stayed the same, as what it is right now. So, and you're right. In Brady Ellingson's case, I think he saw the minutes weren't going to be there. I think Ahmad Wagner saw the same thing. And both of them are taking journeys that make sense for them. For Brady Ellingson, chance maybe to play closer to home, chance maybe to play somewhere small where he can get a lot of minutes. Ahmad Wagner wants to play football. Does he play at Iowa? I don't know. I don't think this is a thing where you turn around and you can be in the starting lineup somewhere right next season. So I think he's going to go somewhere where he's going to get a chance to be. If he was going to be with the Hawkeyes, it would be best for him to be in spring ball right now. Because you just can't be out on the field and start running routes and start doing the things that you need to do to be at a college wide receiver at that level. So, he could go anywhere at this point, and I think he's going to explore all options. And is Iowa an option? Yes, but I think there are a lot of other opportunities for him out there.
So, open scholarship to play around with. Do you anticipate anything happening there? At least guys that'd be eligible to play right away, be it a JUCO, a grad transfer, something like that. Scholarship could also to go to Connor McCaffrey. That's still out there. So, how does this all shake out in your mind?
I think they probably, if they can find someone that can help them immediately, I think they do it. Otherwise, you pocket what scholarships you have for the following year and worry about the 2019 class. But I think that, you know, I mean, like I said, if there's a grad transfer out there that can help them, especially in the backcourt, I think you take a look at them. And, you know, I mean, I think you have to kick the tires on those kind of players because you never know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, if it's somebody that I think Fran McCaffrey's comfortable with, I think they pursue him and bring him in. Same way with a JUCO player. If there's somebody there that can help them right away, you go do it. If it's somebody that maybe isn't going to play next year, then you don't want them. I mean, I think you want to put that scholarship to immediate use. I don't think you want to just get somebody and then have them sit or have them, you know, play not that much. So, I mean, I think it's going to have to be somebody that has to be a good fit for them and has to be a need for them.
Lockdown defender. I think that's a good
yeah.
place to start.
I mean, exactly. And, I mean, I think if they can find that kind of, you know, 6'3", 6'4", guard that can be that kind of player, I think they go after him. You know, or if you find a true shot blocker inside, you know, that's going to just play around the rim, that isn't one that's going to step out, shoot threes and things like that, I think you go after him. But, if you know, again, I don't think you just give it out just because you've got an opportunity. You have to find a specific need for that position.
Talking right now with John Bonacamp from the Burlington Hawkeye, talking some Hawkeye hoops. We'll get into the football here in a moment. With that, Connor McCaffrey, given his fourth year of eligibility after mm-hmm. a redshirt season this year. Again, another one, no big surprise there, but going to mean that Connor and Patrick, when Patrick arrives on campus, they'll have another season to play together. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and I mean it's an opportunity for him to, if he wants to explore basketball, to have a four-year career. And if he doesn't want to do it, well, okay, fine. But, I mean, at least it gives him that opportunity. And I think he can help them out. I thought, you know, in the few games that he did play, I thought he did a lot of good things. I would have liked to have seen him completely healthy and seen what he could have been able to do. And, you know, he's the type of player that I think can give them a good minutes at either guard spot. I just think it's a good chance for him now to kind of settle in and decide what he wants to do, knowing he's got that additional year now to play with.
All right, John, let's jump over to football. You were in Iowa City earlier today as a couple of the assistant coaches met with the media. Got to hear from Reese Morgan and Seth Wallace. Let's start with Coach Morgan working up front with that defensive line. Looks like looking for a little bit of help inside as Matt Nelson out this season. Chauncey Golson, a guy that I've really, I like coming out of high school, moving him inside. I don't know if he's got the size to be full-time a defensive tackle, but certainly an intriguing prospect.
Well, in listening to him today, they're going to try to do the same thing that they did last year, where it's not just going to be, you know, the same four guys up front. You're going to have eight guys, and you're going to rotate them. And the way he explained it today really does make a lot of sense, especially when you do have an undersized line. That, you know, when you're sitting there and you're getting and you're going up against, you know, that a huge offensive line at Wisconsin, you know, you're going to get wore down pretty quickly. So if you keep rotating guys in and out, being undersized then doesn't become that much of a disadvantage. So I do think, yeah, they're still looking for help, but they really do want to have that rotation again and keep fresh guys on the field and see what they can do with that, because I it does kind of negate that size disadvantage that they have. So to me, that was one of the things today. Is like, look, we're trying to build as much depth as we can at all of those positions so we can do the rotation and not lose anything when we take guys out.
So from there over to Seth Wallace working with that linebacker group. Names that I think people that at least look at the depth chart and watch special teams, some names that you know out there, but it's going to be three new starters out there. What did Coach Wallace have to say about that group and how things are going early spring?
You know, one of the things he said was, he goes, and the gist of what he said was, he knows what he has personnel-wise. He just doesn't know what they can do now in new roles. So you've had some guys that have played brief minutes at linebacker, but most of these guys have played special teams of the guys that are in there now. So you know what they can do there. Well, now how are they going to be able to do in a position where they're going to have to start. And they're going to have to perform, you know, for a full game rather than just fill in, you know, occasionally. Because that's the thing, you lost everybody from that position group, you know, your stars last year. So now you got to find some new guys. And, you know, that's where an Aaron Menz comes in. That's where Jack Hockaday, because I've been on the Jack Hockaday bandwagon for years. And, you know, now these are guys that are going to get their opportunity. And so I think he said, you know, at the end of the spring, you're not going to know, you know, who the starting three are going to be, but you're going to have a pretty good idea of what you've got going into August. And so he said, you know, right now it's still a major work in progress. I mean, you only had three practices, but you're going to wait and see on some guys and what they can do. And so, I mean, spring is just going to be about who can step up and be, and that was the other thing he said too, that just because these guys are at a certain position on the depth chart doesn't mean they're going to be there when August rolls around. You know, they're going to put the three best guys out there regardless of what sort of position fit they are, just because of they're going to try to build some depth there. So they're going to put the three best guys out and then figure out where to put them after that.
Very good stuff. Hey, always, John, enjoy our conversations here. What you working on? It's springtime. Things are slowing down. You getting out to the soccer pitch and the track fields here during the spring?
No. We get minor league baseball starting next Thursday.
That's right.
So, you know, it's been nice to not have anything for a little while. But, you know, it starts up now, and it's going to be an interesting summer here, because I think the Angels, who are the Burlington Bees affiliate, they have a lot of prospects that in their top 30 that played last year in the short season levels, and a lot of them are going to be here. So the question is going to be, how long do they stay? And if they do stay, how good can this team be? It's going to be an interesting summer. I'm kind of looking forward to it.
All right, call your shot, Wyzowl. Your Dodgers winning the whole thing?
Of course. I mean, in minimum, if I'm taking the over-under on wins at 106, maybe, they'll be fine. And I've told you that many times, and I'm always right on that, but they'll be fine.
Well, they were fine until Game 7.
Well, yeah, and again, you know, it's Game 7's a crapshoot.
Oh,
and,
okay.
You know,
right.
So, and it was, there was some poor umpiring in there. So, you know, so we go back to that. So like I said, I said minimum, I said over-under, I'd take the over if it's 107 wins. But that's insane.
That's a lot of wins.
Anyway,
that's a lot of wins.
I don't, so.
Well,
yep.
I'm hoping that I get to see your team against my team in the World Series.
We'll see what happens, because, you know, we have money.
So. Yeah, yes, there's
anyway.
No doubt about that. All right, buddy,
right.
Man, we'll talk to you later. Thanks, John.
Yep, have a good one. See ya.
John Bodecamp for the Burlington Hawkeye. Give him a follow on Twitter as well. Always great stuff from John. We'll take a timeout, come back with more on the other side. Taking up until 6 o'clock tonight, it's Jimmy B and TC. Putting a cap on things with some more baseball talk. Joining us right now from Bleacher Report, it is Zach Reinemer. Good to talk with you again, Zach. Off-season just about finished up. How was the off-season for you?
Frustrating, I guess, is the word, because there was nothing to do or write about for a good 2 months of it.
Things
picked up. And it was really good to just get back into baseball when spring training started. It was a little weird that there were so many free agents still available as teams were beginning to do their spring work. But so a little bit of a weird off season, but it's all water under the bridge now with opening day just literally days away. So thankfully we're there.
Yeah, we made it through it. Yet there are still a couple of names out there as it pertains to free agents. Give us a couple of names that you expect maybe to get a call, either if an injury happens, guys still working out, because that long list of free agents, it took forever to just finally kind of to get the cap off and to get these guys signed with different teams. Are there still some names that you're looking at that can help major league teams?
Yeah, I think the big one that everybody is waiting on is Greg Holland. This is a guy who, you know, had kind of a bit of a rocky 41 saves season last year, no pun intended, given they pitched for Colorado, but it, generally speaking, was a good reliever. Generally speaking, has been a good reliever for the bulk of his career. Fastball velocity is down, but still has some pretty good zip on his fastball, still has that really good slider. The reality is that he's a guy that could help pretty much any bullpen in the game, and at this point, I mean, his cost has been driven down. I mean, that ship has sailed, so it's really just a question of who wants him. And it's surprising to me that nobody has stepped up and signed him yet, because he is a guy that can help. So he's the big name on board. You know, other guys out there still got, like, Brandon Phillips. He's still got a few starting pitchers out there. So, but Greg Holland is definitely the big one.
Well, here locally, one of the most active teams of the offseason was the Minnesota Twins. Going out, they bring in Odorizzi on a trade from Tampa. They sign Lance Lynn. They also grab Logan Morrison off the scrap heap at a reduced rate. Hey, for bargain shoppers, and the Minnesota Twins certainly have been that throughout time, this is a great offseason for them.
Yeah, pretty good offseason. Partially motivated by necessity, once Ervin Santana went down with that injury, that's when they stepped up and they got Jake Odorizzi. They went out and signed Lance Lynn. But, you know, like you said, the Logan Morrison thing, that was just like taking advantage of an opportunity. And I like that move a lot, because I think he's a guy who actually did figure some things out last year en route to hitting 38 homers. It's good to have that nice extra power bat in the lineup. Now it's just a question of whether or not they can keep pace with Cleveland in that division. I am highly skeptical of whether or not they can do that, because, well, I think the Twins are good. I mean, Cleveland is just playing great. And I do think they're going to have they have a battle on their hands in terms of the AL wild card race, because there are two super teams in the AL East, the Yankees and Red Sox. Only one of them can win the division. So right there, you've got a battle on your hands. There's as many as three or four contenders in the AL West. The Blue Jays are another team in the AL East have to watch out for. So last year, you know, they were able to get it done with 85 wins. I don't know if 85 wins is going to be enough this year. It's going to be a bit more of a fight.
Yeah, and I had this conversation earlier today in the American League. You mentioned the Red Sox and Yankees. Certainly feel like they've separated themselves. The Indians still the clear favorite, and you got the Astros out west. Then, who else, you know, outside of the winner, the loser, I guess, of the East, the second-place finisher there, the Twins, the Angels, is there anybody else that you're confident that can be competing for that second wild-card spot?
Well, I think the Angels are legitimately good. I have questions about, you know, I know they have pitching depth. I don't know how much quality they have on the mound, but generally speaking, they're a pretty good team. It helps to have the best player in baseball patrolling center field in Mike Trout. They're going to win 85 plus games this year, so I think they're in. The Mariners are going to be tough. The A's are kind of a sleeper contender if they can get some pitching. I mentioned the Blue Jays. I think they're being sorely overlooked in the preseason kind of prognostications. I mean, this is a team that went to the American League Championship Series as recently as 2016, took a step back last year, but really kind of loaded up. Speaking of under the radar off seasons, they went out and got a whole bunch of depth that they needed for their lineup. They went out and get Jaime Garcia for their starting rotation. Aaron Sanchez is healthy this year. So if they have some key guys stay healthy this year, they're a team that could make a run as many as 90 wins, I think. So some pretty good contenders out there in the American League. And then after the contenders, you've got the rebuilders who just have virtually no shot.
So let's jump over to the National League Central. The Cubs, a clear favorite there. You got the Brewers, who had that surprising run a year ago. Cardinals retooling. Is there anybody in your mind that it can at least push this Cubs team?
The Brewers and Cardinals are going to, kind of like last year, they'll be in the mix. But I have kind of the same concerns with both of them, is that I really like their lineups, but I don't really know if the pitching is there. Between the two of them, I think the Cardinals have more options. You know, Carlos Martinez is one of the better pitchers in baseball. Michael Wacha is solid. They still have Adam Wainwright. Luke Weaver is a young pitcher with a lot of talent. But there's not a whole lot underneath those guys. So they really need things to go right, and that bullpen isn't especially strong. So those are my concerns there. And with the Brewers, it's all basically in their starting rotation. I love their lineup. It's a lot deeper now after the offseason they had. But after Chase Anderson, there's not a whole lot of stability there. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Nelson is still recovering from shoulder surgery. So they're going to have to figure some things out. And the problem with the way the Brewers and Cardinals are approaching the season, it's almost as if they think like 85, 90 wins is going to get it done. No, the Cubs are a team that could potentially win 95, 100 games. They took a step back last year, but they finished the season very strong in the second half, got better, I think, over the offseason. They're primed for kind of a return to form this year. So I don't know if either one of those clubs can take the Cubs down.
Yeah, it seems like certainly a stretch there. Do you see the Brewers? I know they shopped in the offseason for another starting pitcher. with the glut of outfielders that they have now, first base with Braun playing first base a little bit more, it looks this season. Can you see a situation where they package a guy or two and go out and try to make a trade early on for a starting pitcher?
Yeah, but it helps that you know, the teams that are rebuilding and could potentially be amenable to an early season trade have kind of incentive to do it. The earlier you trade a guy, the more control you're giving up, the higher the value the guy has. So it's some guys they might be able to target, like a Danny Duffy from Kansas City, good solid left-hander. Chris Archer over with the Rays. His ERA is a bit inflated over the last 2 years, but still has a live arm, still pitches 200 innings per year, which is an increasingly rare skill in this day and age. The Brewers sacrificed a good amount of their prospect depth with that trade for Christian Yelich. Gave up Monty Harrison, gave up Lewis Brinson, but like I said, they have the outfield glut and still have some talent in their minor leagues to barter with, so they're going to be a threat to pick up one of the top guys in the trade market. So between them and the Cardinals, I do think they're the better bet to trade for a brand-name starting pitcher.
Previewing the season starts on Thursday of Major League Baseball right now with Zach Reimer from Bleacher Report. Well, we touched on the Yankees and the Red Sox. Do you like one of those teams more than the other right now?
Well, I picked the Yankees to win the World Series, so I guess I have to side with them in this debate. Yeah, no, I really like the Red Sox. That's the thing. I genuinely think they're a great team that has a chance to win 95, maybe even more games this year. You know, last year their starting rotation was missing David Price. He's healthy now and looking genuinely good in spring training. The stuff is still not what it once was, but really painting those corners almost looks like a John Lester prototype now. And that offense last year was really just missing home runs. And then you go and get a guy who hit 45 of them in only 119 games last year, J.D. Martinez, and you can have Andrew Benintendi get better, Rafael Devers get better, Mookie Betts have a better season. That is a genuinely great team. But I just, you know, I'm over the moon with the idea of Giancarlo Stanton joining up with Aaron Judge. Gary Sanchez is a guy who's really dangerous. Didi Gregorius is really good. I love Luis Severino atop that rotation. I love Masahiro Tanaka. I love Sonny Gray. Everybody in that bullpen throws 95-plus, so they just have an overwhelming amount of weapons at the major league level. And meanwhile, in their minor league system, they have a bunch of guys who are near major league ready that they can either promote to help the big team this year, or they can involve in trades to go fix whatever they need. So they're just loaded in every which way. And given especially, I think, their ability to hit for power and their ability to shut opponents down with their bullpen, they're going to be especially dangerous when they get to October. So I side with the Yankees, but I do want to clarify, the Yankees and Red Sox are both legitimately great teams this year.
All right, finishing up here, a little housekeeping, if you will, off the field. Saw a report from Ken Rosenthal today talking about possibility, Tony Clark, the union leader for the players, possibly a changing of the guard, a lot of conversations about that. Zach, I'm sure you saw that and you have your own thoughts. Possibility, if they're going to make a move, probably the time is now to do it in finding a new head for the players' union.
I did see that, and there have been articles like that have been kind of sprinkled out throughout the course of the offseason, especially as things went along and guys were still not signing. And it's pretty clear that with the last collective bargaining agreement, the players really, really got the short end of the stick, to the point where there is less incentive for teams to spend on veteran players now. And in the meantime, they've kind of rigged the game to spend even less money on younger players. So right now, there is a situation where the players really need to rethink their approach to the financial aspect of these negotiations. And Tony Clark is a former player. He's not like a former lawyer. He's not an economics expert. So he's not really the, you know, ideally he's not really the best guy to go about that. So I understand the complaints. And either way, I think it's pretty obvious that the next CBA negotiation is going to be ugly to a point where there could be a work stoppage, because things have gotten pretty out of hand in terms of the financial balance between the teams and the players, which is not a good look considering that the league is pulling in billions and billions of dollars of revenue every year, $10 billion last year and growing higher every year. The reality that players are getting an increasingly smaller slice of that, or you know, hypothetically anyway, that's not good. And that's something that is going to lead to trouble. So you just hope that it can be resolved, you know, in a peaceful way, but we'll see.
Good stuff. Hey, Zach, as always, good catching up with you again. I'm sure we'll be talking a lot throughout this baseball season. Thanks, as always, so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Zach Reimer, Bleacher Report, where you can find his work. Does a great job on the baseball beat. And give him a follow as well, at Zach Reimer on Twitter. With that, we're done. Show over for today. Thanks to everybody out there for listening in. Busy program today. We talked Cyclones with Alex Halstead in the first hour. Kerry Miller stopped by. A look at NCAA tournament in the March Madness with the Final Four upon us. Earlier this hour, John Bonacamp, Chris Atterbury on the Twins. Good catching up with him. And keep your eyes peeled. Might have some news coming for you with some baseball here on 1700. Still to be determined. Don't want to talk out of turn. Hopeful it all comes together. Well, coming up tonight, we got more basketball for you. The NIT, that's right. We got the NIT on the airwaves tonight with the Westwood One coverage. And looking forward to that. It's basketball. It's the NIT. There's nothing real local involved. But hey, it's hoops. Got to get into the hoops. And I'm certainly going to be jumping in right there. So if you're out and about this evening, we have you covered. Game number one, Utah against Western Kentucky. I like the Hilltoppers, laying the 1.5. And game two, give me Penn State all day long. The Lions are good in the NIT. I am jumping on the train. Give me Penn State. That's my favorite of the night. Be keeping my eye on that one. Plus the NBA tonight. The Bulls are in Houston. That'll be just an absolute shellacking. You got to assume, keep an eye on the playoff race. Certainly going to be a part of that one. NHL this evening, let's see. You know, the Wild might, in fact, have to play Nashville in the opening round. I'll probably dip into that one a little bit. Keep an eye on that this evening. Ken's excited tonight. His Winnipeg Jets, they got Boston. A possible preview of the Stanley Cup Finals. That's what Ken was telling me earlier today. I'm not sure about that. Speaking of that, hey, you can catch me and Ken Miller each and every day from noon until 2 here on 1700. And then Jimmy B and TC on your drive home from 4 until 6 o'clock with a lot more to come here on 1700. Thanks for everybody for listening. Once again, we'll do it again tomorrow here on 1700 KBGG. Good night, everybody.